Now, can you take us back 170 years ago or so to the 1840s? Paint us a picture of Victorian England. What social circumstances prompted Charles Dickens to write this book?
Well, first of all, you have to think about a huge economic downturn, a really stunning failure of work for many people. So there's a huge unemployment rate. There was a tax on bread, which meant that people who were hungry could not only not afford meat, they couldn't afford bread. There were food riots. There were strikes. So that's the general picture. You're looking at a newly industrialized country where people are not really familiar with economic downturns, where the government itself wasn't really sure what to do about them, and where specifically parliamentarians were struggling to work out laws around employment. So they were, in the early 1840s, friends of Dickens were working on a parliamentary commission on child labor in the mines. They were working to limit the hours that children could work. And so Dickens was worried about the general situation, but he was also very specifically concerned with child labor. He was also interested in children's education, and he was had been touring ragged schools, what were called ragged schools. They were schools for the absolute poorest of the urban poor children. And Dickens was a promoter of public education, which actually didn't come to be in Britain until the year he died.
And it's easy to lose sight of it more than a century later. But at the time, was he a leading voice in England for social reform, or was he simply a writer of stories?
He was considered by reformers to be someone who could be on their side. And in fact, he was approached by one of the commissioners on the mining, the Commission on Children's Work in the Mines, to write a pamphlet. And he promised that he would write a pamphlet, and he was actually also trying to write an article on the ragged schools. He didn't write the pamphlet, but he wrote to the commissioner and said, "What I have written, I think, will be like a sledgehammer 20,000 times as strong as that pamphlet." And that was A Christmas Carol.
Can you put that into context for us? There was a sort of a Victorian tradition of Christmas books. Does A Christmas Carol fit into that, or is that something separate? What is the Christmas book tradition, first of all?
Well, the Christmas book tradition refers initially to the Christmas market for selling books. And we have that a bit too, where certain books will be released at Christmas or they come out in paperback at Christmas. And in the early 19th century, the big market for publishing was in the spring. And then the innovation that switched it to Christmas was something called the gift book. And the gift book or the annual was a quite lavishly produced, heavily illustrated, beautifully produced and quite expensive book. And Dickens definitely saw this as being a Christmas book. He was careful to make sure it had a gorgeous cover. It had it was a gold embossed cover. It had gilt edges on it. It had colored plates. So he definitely was marketing it for a Christmas audience.
Isn't that interesting? So he's asked to write this pamphlet, you know, almost a political document, and instead he comes up with this amazing story.
He does.
Beautifully packaged.
Yes.
And
how
was it originally received when it was published?
It was received, it was a triumph. It was received with enormously positive reviews, both from the liberal press, which one might expect, but also from the conservative press. So it's interesting to see, you know, the Tory press saying that this was enormously moving, that he had shown the grinding sorrow and difficulty of poor people's lives. Margaret Oliphant memorably called it a new gospel. She felt it had had that kind of influence.
So give us a sense of that, how it compares to other fiction of the time.
Well, there were other social novels to begin with. There were what were called social problem novels, where people wrote about the industrial poor. They wrote about the problems of the era. People like Elizabeth Gaskell wrote movingly about factory life in Manchester, for example. So I would say what stands out about Dickens is that he managed to combine the ghost story with contemporary realism. He brings those two forms together. It's a really triumphant melding of a Gothic tradition with social realism.
When you look at the writing itself, is there anything about the narrative structure that's unique in any way?
You know, it's the temporal compression. It's the fact that it takes place in one 24-hour period. And yet in the course of that 24 hours, we see Scrooge's whole life from childhood right to death. And so what's innovative about it is the use of flashback and flash forward, right? We're used to that now. Cinema does it a lot.
Sure. It's almost become a cliche 170 years later, but
exactly.
Then it was not, I take.
Then it was very innovative. So he uses the magical parts, the sort of mystical parts of the tale, the ghost. They become, as it were, technologies to show Scrooge his own memories. And it's important, I think, in narrative terms that we don't have Scrooge recalling his own past. He's a little bit detached from it. He's looking at his former self. And so you see the older Scrooge looking at the younger Scrooge. And really the narrative shows us the process whereby he takes those memories back into himself and starts to live as the person that has those memories back inside him. But initially, he's distanced from himself. And it's a very, it's a fascinating narrative technique to show that distance.
It's fascinating to hear about the historical context of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. What about in the current day? Do you think it's had an impact on what this society or the Western world has become, or how we live today in any ways?
Well, I think it's become one of the great stories that we think about when we think about Christmas and when we think about responsibility at Christmas. I think when Scrooge starts off and says, you know, that mankind is not my business, you know, he's speaking of business, meaning merely making money. And the whole narrative is saying that humanity is your business. So I think from that perspective, it has had a huge impact, yes.
And that's why it still resonates today?
I think so. But, you know, also maybe because Dickens brought an acknowledgement of grief into Christmas. And that's something that I think is very profound. You know, it's something that's difficult for people when they approach Christmas to think about loss. But this is a narrative that tells us about loss and also celebration. It brings those two things together. It acknowledges, for example, Tiny Tim's possible death and weaves that into a tale that began with celebration. The first, you know, illustration of A Christmas Carol when you open up is the Fezziwig's ball. It bespeaks joy, and we end with joy. So, you know, it's a narrative that brings together loss and gain, grief, and sort of the integration of all of your life, all of the experiences of your life.
Well, Dr. Serge, thank you very much. You've not only made me want to see the play more, but actually go out and read the book once again, too.
I hope you all do. Thank you.
Lisa Surridge, a professor at the University of Victoria who specializes in mid-Victorian novels.